Prosimo introduces a new cost calculator. Storpool adds erasure coding in version 21. We've got a new architectural observability manager from vFunction, a new generative AI platform from Alluxio, Lenovo and NVIDIA are getting together for hybrid AI, and we've got some announcements from NetApp Insight. Plus, we've got a deep dive conversation between myself and Leona Dotto from the ISS Summit in Cleveland about the job market and the economy and how to find your career path. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown, where each time we meet, we run down the IT news of the week with a variable degree of snarkiness. I'm your host, Stephen Foskett, and joining me live from the Information Security Summit in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, is my friend Leona Dotto.
Yes, Leona Dotto. You can find me at Leona Dotto on almost every social media platform. Also, my website and blog, adottosystems.com, and also at kentik.com, where I am a principal technical evangelist.
So we are thrilled to be here in Cleveland for an information security event. Now, who knew? There was a big information security event right here in Cleveland every year.
Every year for 21 years or something like that. It's been going on for a long time.
And it was awful nice of them to invite us and to include us on the agenda, get us a great podcast guest as well. I also should mention, though, that today is National Greasy Foods Day, which kind of goes with the conference attendee experience to some people, National Merry Music Day, and, of course, Chucky the Notorious Killer Doll Day.
And also, on the other end of the spectrum, it's also National I Care About You Day.
I care about
I
you.
I care about you.
I care about you. I really do. He's all right.
We've known each other for a minute.
All right. So let's get into the news of the week then. First up, we're looking at Prosimo. Managed cloud networking costs are a major concern for enterprises, and Prosimo's Cloud Cost 360 is an interesting concept, promising detailed insights into data egress, cloud-native infrastructure, and security fees. It enables organizations to implement chargeback models based on usage, making cost management more straightforward, and helping companies optimize their networking experience in a complex cloud environment. We just saw Prosimo present at Cloud Field Day, and this is a nice little follow-on for that.
It is, and I am a big fan of Corey Quinn of the Duck Bill Group and Quinny Pig on, again, social media in many places. And right, there we go. So I think that the role of cloud economist is one that is still underappreciated and underutilized, but it's also really hard. And that's why you don't have a lot of people running around hanging out a shingle as a cloud economist also. And it's why Corey's business is so unique. The idea that you have somebody who is both familiar with the architecture of a cloud infrastructure platform and also interested at all with the billing and the finance part of it and the implication, the financial implication of how you build things. It's hard to find somebody who cares like that. And like in IT, like we do with anything that's a difficult problem, we throw technology at it. And I like that Prosimo has built a repeatable system where you can input your cloud specifics and it will say, okay, it's going to kind of cost this because you're doing this, especially with the most expensive part, the data ingress, the data egress, and all of that. So that's one of the things that really, you know, both surprised and delighted me to hear about them. Storpool has unveiled version 2.1, aimed at enhancing data protection, adding erasure coding in their enterprise storage platform. This new technology enables Storpool to offer better performance and reliability at a reduced cost, not to mention improved flexibility. We've seen Storpool at Tech Field Day in the past, and this is a major advancement for the platform.
Yeah, I have to say, it really is a huge advancement. So those of you who don't know, Storpool is a what is commonly called software-defined storage. I don't love that, but it's software. It's storage software. Basically, they build a absolute top-of-the-line enterprise-class storage array in software, and it gives you the kind of performance and reliability and features that you would get from a hardware storage array. And yet, it is easily deployable. It's much more flexible that way. This advancement is huge. Now, if you're not a storage nerd like me, you may not really know what erasure coding is. It has nothing to do, unfortunately, with the 80s synthpop band. Erasure coding is basically an advanced way of doing the math around data distribution and data protection. So you probably have heard of RAID, which is a pretty simple way of doing that math. Basically, you know, you got some storage here and you got a parity over there. Erasure coding blows that all up. You can have multiple redundant blocks. You can have blocks distributed all over the place. You can grow, you can shrink, you can change the encoding. And the way that StorPool is doing this is very, very smart. Essentially, they are storing data as in erasure-coded bands, and then those bands are distributed as wide as they need to be. They can be recalculated in the event of data loss, in the event of data corruption, and bring that data back, which is just incredible. You can have multiple levels of parity, and yet, you might ask yourself, why doesn't every array work this way? Well, the answer is because this is computationally intensive. And it requires a lot of computation, a lot of memory. Now, that is a problem. But SSDs have a really interesting, they have the same kind of thing, well, in a way, writing blocks to multi-level cell and so on requires time and computation and work and everything. And how SSDs do this is that they initially write the data to a single level cell, and then later they'll go back and they'll kind of put it out on the final way. That's exactly what StorPool's doing here. So essentially what they're doing is on data ingest, they're writing the same way they always did, which we know works really, really well and is high performance and doesn't require a lot of compute and memory. And then later, every hour, maybe even less than that, depending on how the system's working, they'll go back and they'll re-spread that data out. This allows the system to perform just as well as it always did, and yet offer really new levels of data efficiency, data protection, and so on. It also means that the system can be incredibly flexible because you can add storage, you can add nodes, and it can sort of incorporate those over time. It's a really nice system, and in a way, it's kind of too bad that StorPool is sort of hiding this under a bucket because it transforms the product entirely.
Nice.
VFunction's new Architectural Observability Manager offers a solution to the pervasive issue of technical debt in IT. By providing visibility into the impact of technical debt on application architecture and using machine learning to identify sources of tech debt, AO empowers organizations to manage technical debt effectively and optimize their business processes, whether it's application transformation or just incremental shifts to microservices or drift prevention. Now, I got the chance to talk to VFunction about this, and I was very impressed by this solution. What do you think?
I just learned about them as we were talking about this, and I will tell you that, first of all, technical debt is no secret among developers, among development teams, and even within organization, the parts of the organization that have a lot to do with application dev. However, I think that other parts of the organization are often sort of shocked, strangely, that it's a thing, which always surprises me, just having been in that area for so long. But I will tell you that some enlightened managers will actually reward good dev behavior of paying down technical debt, but those managers are few and far between. Most of the time, tech debt simply accrues until something blows up. What I didn't know was the amount or the cost of it, that anywhere from 15 to 60% of every IT dollar spent is spent around or about technical debt, that there's a cost there. And I think that, again, IT people are really bad at talking about business, but we need to be better about it, because I think that if more upper-level management and leadership knew that, they would be more eager to look at solutions like VFunction. So VFunction operates by using the same techniques that we use for monitoring, which is near and dear to my heart, to see which parts of the application or the application code base have atrophied in some way. And once again, that's both data at rest, meaning the data in your repository, and also data in motion, the data that's actually been deployed in production. I think this is an incredibly smart way to do it, to see, you know, how much code has either not changed in a really long time or has flaws in it. You know, we talk a lot about using monitoring to find 0 days and things like that, but you also can use it to find just bad code or old code or old libraries. And that can identify places that you need to go to, again, pay down that technical debt. And technical debt isn't just we did something in a really kludgy way and it sort of works, but we don't know how. It can also just be things that are aging out. I've been on multiple projects where the version of the platform, let's say Java, was so old that the new members of the team had never used it before and didn't understand the functions that had been completely deprecated before they ever started learning how to code. And that's not code investigation, that's code archaeology at that point. So it really helps identify those things before it gets to that point and raise them up and also present them in a way that is actionable and meaningful to the business. Alluxio's new enterprise AI platform leverages their decentralized object repository architecture to optimize GPU usage, accelerate AI pipelines, and fine-tune pre-trained models. Alluxio has long impressed by dynamically translating between various data sources and protocols, but this is a different beast, making AI more efficient and cost-effective by eliminating unnecessary processing layers.
Absolutely. I am a huge Alluxio fan, and I have been for a long time. The core product does something very, very neat, which is that it allows you to have data sources in almost any protocol accessed in almost any other protocol, which is kind of cool, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got an application that needs to access, I don't know, S3 buckets, and you've got your data in, I don't know, I'm just picking something, MySQL. Well, how do you do that? It's really hard to do that. Now, I don't know if that's an exact workload that you would actually do, but the point is, basically, you've got data in different places, you've got data users in different places, and they need to access it. And Alluxio basically bridges that gap as sort of a data virtualization platform. Now, AEAI, Alluxa,
O-U-M-O-U-S-E. Yes,
Alluxio Enterprise AI, which is very hard to say, I'm sorry to say. This new platform is optimized for AI applications. Now, yes, it does what I just described. It allows you to access data in different platforms, but it also does something more important, which is that it accelerates access to that. So essentially, it is, again, a virtualization platform that allows you to access data across different data sources, but it's also doing things like translating and preparing that data in a way that Alluxio claims can actually improve AI processing and improve the CPU utilization and so on these systems, because frankly, you're not doing a lot of data work. You're letting the Alluxio platform do that work for you. So again, it's a very cool use of this technology, and I was also really impressed that they're not just leaning on that whole thing of, yeah, we're translating data. They're actually doing something pretty cool with that data in feeding AI engines more efficiently. Lenovo has entered into a strategic partnership with NVIDIA through the NVIDIA Hybrid AI Initiative. This offers researchers and data scientists access to the highest performance hardware, particularly Lenovo's ThinkSystem servers optimized for GPU-accelerated AI workloads. Now, Lenovo is a supply chain master, but is this just another collaboration, or does it really shake up the enterprise and HPC world of artificial intelligence?
Well, okay, so first of all, if it doesn't include artificial intelligence, it obviously isn't valid anymore, because everything has to, from my toaster on up, has to have AI. That being said, I think that a partnership between Lenovo and NVIDIA is actually really exciting, and it underscores for me the fact that hardware is not, it is still not trivial or unnecessary, that having specific chipsets and particular hardware integrations still matter from, that's the lowest level to the highest level, meaning artificial intelligence and machine learning and three if statements in a trench coat and whatever. So I think that that's important. I also think it's interesting that this news comes on the heels of finding out that they can't actually export chips to China, that they had actually built an entire set of chips, a line of chips that was exportable, and then the U.S. government came in and said, nope, not those either. You can't do those. So this, you know, I'm not sure if this is making use of technology that they were developing for other things, but NVIDIA is obviously a leader in GPUs. And we know that AI is incredibly, you know, GPU intensive. So I think that this is a really good partnership, and I expect to see some interesting things come out of it along the way. At Insight 2023, NetApp featured the expansion of unified data storage, the ASA C-Series for cost-effective block storage, enhancements to NetApp Keystone Storage as a Service, robust ransomware defense, and AI data pipeline optimization. The new ASA C-Series family is focused on cost savings and sustainability for block storage, extending the all-flash ASA with cheaper C-Series flash.
Yep, the news earlier this year was the big players in the storage space adopting cheaper QLC flash. So you had Pure Storage and NetApp both kind of duking it out there with their cost-optimized platforms. And at that time, NetApp introduced the ASA, which was basically an all-flash block storage array. So kind of a competitor for Pure's flash array. And now they've enhanced that with this lower cost flash as well, which is, I think, great news coming out of NetApp Insight. That being said, though, it's probably predictable news considering that the ASA and the C-Series kind of came out at the same time. And you're like, well, when are they, you know, these two going to get together? Well, now.
Here we are.
And so that's great. I'm glad to see that they did this. This is actually a really solid product. Is it an exciting product, though? I mean, is a all-flash block storage array really an exciting product in 2023? Is it worth being the center of the keynote? I'll leave that to the listener to decide. Some of the other stuff coming out of NetApp Insight was sort of a reiteration of what we've heard previously. Now, Keystone is their storage as a service. They've enhanced that. They've got performance and availability guarantees. One of the things I really like that NetApp is doing is they have a sustainability guarantee. In other words, they're guaranteeing that you're not going to bust your corporate ESG initiatives by going with NetApp Keystone, which good on you guys. Mm-hmm. Another aspect is that they've got a ransomware recovery guarantee coming. Now, again, I don't want to make this all about competitors, but that's kind of what Pure was talking about, Accelerate. So yeah, NetApp's got something like that coming too, which is great. Mm-hmm. A more important, impactful announcement was that they've enhanced their Google Cloud NetApp Volumes offering, which means that now NetApp is the only platform with a truly native solution in all of the major public clouds. Unfortunately, the product is called something entirely different in each public cloud. So you have Amazon FSx for NetApp ONTAP, you have Microsoft Azure NetApp Files, and Google Cloud NetApp Volumes.
Perfectly logical.
All of those products are essentially real NetApp really running as a service in the cloud, which is wonderful for NetApp customers. It's also opened the door to new NetApp customers, people who are cloud native and are looking for a more advanced storage solution. They find this thing and they're like, wow, this is a real full-featured enterprise storage platform there in the cloud. As I said, NetApp is really the only company so far that's delivered that in all three of the major public clouds here in the US. So again, good on you, NetApp. But you know, it seems like this is a bit of a thin event, a bit of a thin announcement, and I look forward to hearing kind of where NetApp goes next. So we are at the 21st Annual Information Security Summit in Cleveland today, and it's been an interesting event for us. Not only is this close to home in Northeast Ohio, where we live, we all live there.
Yeah, everyone lives there. It's a great place.
But this long-running event attracts a wide range of audiences and presenters across the information security space. You may not know it, but information security is actually one of the hot topics, one of the hot industries here in Ohio. Ransomware and AI, of course, are on everyone's lips all over the place. Everybody's talking about it. But we're also hearing some other sessions and in the hallway track about some other things, including enterprise IT spending and budgets, as well as employment. And a lot of people here are open for work, which is, I think, an interesting point. What can we take away from the ISS this year?
So the career side is what's really both impressing and making an impact on me. I mean, we were setting up our booth and people were coming by, where are you from? I'm from looking for my next role. Let's face it, IT is IT. Layoffs have been in the air. They continue to be in the air. One of my side things that I do just as a service is putting out a list of jobs every week that come across my desk and Slack and Discord. And InfoSec jobs are a decent part of those. And it's nice to see a local concert that has not just we're this company and we have security or whatever, but also each of the vendors has a HR person. There's a job fair that's going on actually this morning to talk about where there are opens. I'm actually gonna wander through there because one of my family members is looking to pivot. But I think that a larger takeaway is that these things happen in lots of places. The career fair is actually virtual, so you don't have to be in Cleveland to participate in it. And I know that a lot of career fairs are hit or miss. I've heard from colleagues that, you know, they go to a career fair, there's, you know, three vendors, no jobs, 100 people, what do I do? The fact is that they are hit or miss, but they're not skip. You've got to put in the time. Finding a job is a job in and of itself. So that's the first takeaway that I have, is that you've got to put in the time. There's a lot of resources. I've, you know, been talking to some of the vendors and they're all familiar with the, you know, for example, Leslie Carhart, who also goes by Hacks for Pancakes online and has a website that is almost fully dedicated to helping people get into or pivot to InfoSec. The website is tisiphany.net. And then also Alyssa Miller, who literally wrote the book on InfoSec and the different areas that you can have a career in. And also Gabriel Hempel, Gabsmash on social media. So, you know, people know these names and they're familiar with them. And if you're looking for work in InfoSec, you should become familiar with them also. And I just think that that is an important aspect of any IT show, is, you know, not only showing up with your corporate story, your value proposition, whatever's new in your feature set, but also being open to people who are open to work, like you said. It's a great opportunity on both sides of the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's important to note, one of the things that I love about coming to conferences, of course, it's great when they're right here in my backyard, but any conferences anywhere is the human side of things. Unfortunately, through the pandemic, we were remote for a lot of conferences, and I think that that causes issues in terms of really making connections and building connections, getting to know people and so on. And when you actually get in front of somebody, it can be incredibly valuable. You can make real connections and meet real friends. And also, yes, you can find your next gig. You can find, you know, the next interesting company, the next interesting product or vendor. It's much easier to do that in person.
I'll also add that with job hunting, the person you're talking to may not have the job that you want, but the person you're talking to knows the person who knows the job that you want. And so, again, those personal connections. I am a telecommute, work from home evangelist. I've been doing it for a dozen years. But at the same time, there are certain, you know, you want to read somebody's body language. You want to, have that side conversation that in a remote format, an asynchronous format, often doesn't come up as naturally. There are times and places where, you know, being face-to-face really does make a difference.
The other thing I'll say, and again, this actually came from this wonderful lady who stopped by our booth this morning, get yourself out there. Do something interesting. Make yourself memorable. So, I can't wait to read the cybersecurity book for children. That she mentioned.
Take my money now.
When that gets published, we're going to share that here.
Yeah.
But in addition, there's a lot of people that are getting on podcasts, starting their own podcasts. One of the easiest things that somebody can do to get yourself noticed in the industry and find that next gig or build your community, your network, is to start sharing information. And one of the easiest ways to do that now is on LinkedIn. So just go to LinkedIn, and instead of just creating a post, create an article which is basically a blog on LinkedIn, and those have legs. A LinkedIn post is gone in a week. A LinkedIn article basically is a blog that's going to last for a long, long time. So create an article on LinkedIn, then share it as a post on LinkedIn. Tag some people. Tag me. Tag Leon.
Yes.
We will read it. We will promote it. We will share it for you. We love new voices. Another thing I'm going to recommend as well is get on Mastodon, especially if you're in the InfoSec community.
Yes.
The InfoSec community, by and large, congregates on Mastodon. So you've got instances like Hackyderm, which is just a phenomenal community of InfoSec people. There's others as well.
InfoSec Exchange is the one I'm on.
Exactly. And again, the moderators of both of those communities are really phenomenal individuals. They're open, they're friendly, they're here to help. And it's a great way to start building that community and getting recognized. And again, one of the things that I'll say too is the best way to build a community is to start helping others, to start answering questions, to start promoting work that others do. Give them a comment, give them a like, give them a boost on LinkedIn or on Mastodon. And what you'll find is that that they'll appreciate your efforts and they'll respond in kind. So, you know, kind of building this community is the key to finding not just a job, but really a career.
And I'll say for people who are listening to that and saying, but I can't answer questions yet, I'm too new, or I don't know that thing, then ask more questions, ask clarifying questions. The fear that a lot of people have of appearing uninformed or inexperienced is entirely unnecessary. I think that sometimes, as somebody who often sits in the chair of the voice of the expert, I appreciate someone asking me a question that allows me to clarify my point. And you can do that. You can be the foil for them by showing that engagement and asking, you know, what to you seems like, but that's the part I don't know. And a lot of people are like, wow, I never thought to look at it from that side. That can be helpful also. And it doesn't take anything except a curious mind and a willing mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a rule at Tech Field Day. Now, Tech Field Day is full of people who are presumably purportedly experts. But one of the things that I have to tell the delegates before we go live is I have to reassure them that they have valid questions and that they have valid thoughts. And that may surprise you because you may be thinking, you know, I know these people. Of course they have valid thoughts. But everybody has imposter syndrome. In fact, my good friends, Chris and Zoe, have the Imposter Syndrome podcast.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, yeah. You know, it is out there. It is real. And the truth is, if you're thinking it, other people are thinking it as well. If you're wondering what's the answer to that, other people are thinking. And speaking as a former consultant, the most valuable lesson that I learned in consulting was to be able to say, I don't know about that. Tell me about it. Because that's how you learn. And by doing that, by sharing what you've learned, you're helping others to learn and helping others to grow. And that kind of giving is the best way to get. So for me, that is the key to solving this job search, career growth question.
Yeah, I find that in any technical project, the problem is never we have too many answers. The problem is we didn't ask the right questions. So I think that that's a big deal. And you can also never have too many resources. I do, like I said, I post every week, and at the bottom of that post are a list of job hunting resources, which is by no means exhaustive. But you want to, you know, as part of finding your space, your tribe, again, you know, Mastodon may be the place that you will land, but it may be that you just have a collection of LinkedIn folks, or you may end up on Blue Sky, you know, or whatever. But finding the people that you can, you know, gather with and, you know, and get together with and ask, you know, ask each other, push each other, that's also incredibly important. The last part is it takes a while. I was just in a job search myself. It took me 6 months. It is a challenging job market right now. And so I like to remind people that I have just about every ounce of privilege that a human body can hold, except I'm not the son of the CEO and I'm not going to inherit the company. That's the only one I'm missing. And if it takes me 6 months to find a job, it's probably just as challenging. You know, being discouraged is a feeling, but it's not an end result, right? That is how you feel about something, but you have to keep on, you know, even if it's your first role or you're pivoting from something completely different into InfoSec, keep on pushing, keep on trying. You're going to get there.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you as well for the job listings resource. You know, it's just a nice little thing that you can do to help the community. So thanks for listening to the Gestalt IT Rundown this week. Let's take a quick look at some of the things that are coming up ahead. So happening right now, live in California, is Networking Field Day 33. Check out the Tech Field Day website at techfieldday.com for a complete list of companies and presenters. As mentioned, we're here at the Information Security Summit in Cleveland, and you can find out more about that. Also, we have Security Field Day 10 coming up November 8th and 9th. Check out techfieldday.com for more about that. We'll also be attending KubeCon that week, and we've got another special event that I'm not ready to announce yet. Thanks for watching the Gestalt IT Rundown. You can find new episodes every Wednesday as a YouTube video at gestaltit.com. No, let's try that again. Thanks for watching and listening to the Gestalt IT Rundown. You can find new episodes every Wednesday on YouTube, or you can find us in your favorite podcast application. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about all of the IT news from the week that was. But until then, for myself, Stephen Foskett, for Tom Hollingsworth, our normal host, for Leon Adato, and all of us here at Gestalt IT, here's wishing you and yours an appreciative and secure day.